dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And a part of that battle space is hotting up rather dramatically of late. It's never all that cool, really, but it is certainly getting more interesting, more dynamic, and perhaps more ominous. And that is the Middle East, notably developments in Egypt and Saudi Arabia that suggest President Obama is putting the cart, well, pretty squarely in the ditch, as they say. And to make sense of this, to understand what he's done, what its implications might be, where do we go from here, we're joined by Raymond Stock, one of the nation's preeminent experts, especially on Egypt, but very knowledgeable about the Middle East more broadly. He is a man who has written extensively from the Middle East, notably for about 20 years living in Egypt. He is an author and expert on Naguib Mahfouz, preeminent Nobel laureate from the region in literature, and a guy that we turn to with regularity to make sense of what's going on in the Near East. Welcome back, Raymond. Good to have you with us.
Thanks very much for having me back, Frank.
It's a pleasure. So let me just introduce a statement that President Obama made long before he became president, back in 2002, when he was inveighing against George W. Bush's policy, and specifically the idea of going to war with the Iraqis. He said, quote, "Let's fight to make sure our so-called allies in the Middle East, the Saudis and the Egyptians, stop oppressing their own people and suppressing dissent and tolerating corruption and inequality and mismanaging their economies so that their youth grow up without education, without prospects, without hope, the ready recruits of terrorist cells," unquote. Raymond Stock, it seems as though President Obama, as president, brought some of that same attitude towards the job. Let's talk first about our so-called ally in Egypt, who he set about, forcing into a change of government, and now is dealing with the consequences of having done so with the removal of that government by the military. Where are we with respect to Egypt, and specifically the alliance with the United States that's been kind of a bulwark of our posture and interests there for decades?
Well, Frank, for the first time since the Camp David Accords in 1978 and the 1979 Egypt-Israel peace treaty, there is a real danger of losing the alliance between Egypt and the United States, primarily because our president has backed the Islamists in Egypt, particularly the Muslim Brotherhood and ultimately its Salafi allies along with them, just by backing them. So that is to say that they've been somewhat cautious in the sense that the administration has not yet called what happened when the removal of Morsi back in July 3rd a coup, which would cut off all aid, apparently, by U.S. law. But he has, in effect, cut off the aid by freezing it pending a review. So the last tranche of about $585 million worth of aid, which was supposed to go to Egypt this year, has been suspended pending the
completion. And some arms sales as well, as I understand it, to the Egyptian
military? Arms sales and arms transfers that were already planned. I mean, the 20 F-16s were supposed to go to Egypt this year. Four of them were held up. I mean, some of them had gone earlier in the year to Morsi. Even though many people objected to that idea, but he went ahead with that.
Yeah.
But when Morsi was removed on the spurious grounds, in my opinion, that he was democratically elected and therefore should be supported at all costs, he suspended the next four that were due, and he also suspended the joint training exercises called Bright Star, and that was the first thing he did. And then the second thing was to have a review of this. The first two things he did. And then he had a review of the bilateral relationship, which he should have initiated really severely under Morsi. Instead, under Morsi, he actually increased aid by at least $250,000 or more.
Leading the Egyptian people, not unreasonably, to conclude that the United States was very much on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is, as you know, Ravenstock created some of the turmoil that we're witnessing at the moment.
Absolutely.
If the Egyptian military, under the leadership of a man that you've noodled around both with us and in some of your published works, is, well, not exactly a non-Islamist, but a nationalist before an Islamist. Where does that likely leave the Egyptian government, the Egyptian military, the Egyptian attitude of finding perhaps another international sponsor rather than the United States?
Well, there are signs that they've already begun to diversify their military sourcing. So they are... they have enhanced their relationship with Russia, and apparently with China, but I'm not sure how much with China, in a military sense. But they have there have been reports of increased military cooperation and perhaps purchases from Russia. There, and this is not really the details of this. I'm not sure of, but this is apparently happening. And certainly, there's a great deal of discussion of that would happen. Nabil Fahmy, the new foreign minister, who was formerly the Egyptian ambassador to Washington under Mubarak. He has said that they are looking, they're going to meet their needs from any sources they need.
Yeah.
Any other militaries outside the United States as a supplier. So they therefore are saying we're no longer dependent upon this relationship. And they're getting a lot of money from the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates, up to $12 billion so far, I believe, to underwrite their current program. So that includes, of course, civilian as well as military. So I don't know how much they'll be able to apply to the military side, and if they'll be able to buy the right equipment to meet their needs at first. But if they begin a long-term process of transition to another supplier, nothing would stop them from ultimately doing that.
Yeah, and the Russians are only too happy, presumably, to find both a new client for their weapon sales, but also a new strategic entry point, returning really to the region in a way they haven't been in a long time. Let me ask you, you mentioned the Saudis, Ravenstock, and of course you are currently with the Middle East Forum in Philadelphia, but talk a little bit about this, what the Saudis are doing. They, too, have signaled in rather direct and undiplomatic language lately that they're not so keen on the Obama administration and, for that matter, now the United States either. Where are they headed?
Saudi Arabia,
what are the implications of that?
I'm sorry. Both Egypt and Saudi Arabia have a common problem with our strategy currently in the Middle East, which is that we're backing the Islamists. Now, the Saudis, of course, are the great propagators of Islamist propaganda in many ways. Their madrasas, their Wazarat al-Dawah, I believe it's called, their ministry, which promotes Islam, has been traditionally behind a great deal of the radicalism, which has spread worldwide, so including in Egypt and other places, in the United States as well, in Europe. So they have a to say the least, a very ambivalent role in all this. But they are also vulnerable to these same radical groups whose ideology, to a degree, they propagate. So they are cooperating with us against these groups. So they have traditionally been cooperating with us against these groups, and also against Iran, which is a great regional rival, being both a Shiite power and a foreign, a foreign ethnicity. They're Persian, but not Arabs, and they are disputing each other for hegemony in the Persian or Arab Gulf, depending on which side of that Gulf you're on.
And the Muslim world more generally, I guess, right?
And the Muslim world more generally, because that's, of course, the king of Saudi Arabia is Khadim al-Haramain. He is the servant of the two holy sites, Mecca and Medina. So this is, of course, their claim to legitimacy. And they have, it's interesting, they have stepped in to help Assisi in Egypt, in a big way, and they hesitated although they pledged the money originally with Morsi, they hesitated to really help him because he was the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood has pledged to overthrow their government ultimately.
And Raymond, we're almost out of time, but very quickly,
sure.
The Saudis declared purpose or justification for distancing themselves from the United States and for that matter, spurning the offer to become a member of the UN Security Council temporarily, is that they're unhappy about what's going on in Syria and the West's and the international community, for that matter's response to it. Very quickly, is that really what's going on, or is there something else at work?
I think one of the biggest issue for them is Iran. They are very concerned that we are going to make a fool's deal, a fool's bargain with Iran and buy their carpets and wind up letting them have nukes.
I have to say I'm fearful of that myself, Raymond Stock, as I suspect are you. We're going to have to visit further about this in the near future if we can. Thank you for the great work you do at the Middle East Forum and for your contributions here and elsewhere. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, Fred Fleiss joins us from Lignet.com. We'll talk about this business of the Saudis and the UN Security Council and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.